Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson, and this is Miss Into Podcast.
The Kelly Clarkson Fan Podcast, talking all things, Kelly. And to you.
Here is Jeremy and Pam.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of Miss Into Podcast, the Kelly Clarkson Fan Podcast. My name is Pam.
And I'm Jeremy, and you have joined us on a very, very exciting week. We are so excited today to have one of the touring percussionists for Kelly Clarkson on with us today. He is Todd Collins. It's his first time on the show, and we are looking forward to talking to him both about his history, obviously, with Kelly, but also his own personal history. We're going to take it all the way back to the early days when he used to be a basketball player and then somehow ended up on stage playing percussion for Kelly Clarkson. We'll let you know how he got from point A to point B.
And a little hint there, it happens to be through other Kelly Clarkson band members.
Shocker.
Shocker.
Before we get to our conversation today with Todd Collins, we have to talk about the big news that came out in Kelly World in the last week. And of course, shame on her for putting this news out the same day that we released a new podcast episode. So it took us an entire week to react to this. So we are the last ones who get to react to the fact that Kelly Clarkson announced two standalone concerts at the Hard Rock Live at Etis Arena in Atlantic City, Pam.
Woohoo! I am excited because it is East Coast and it is my state. I can probably count on one hand how many times I've seen her in Jersey, so I'm super pumped, even though it's still a couple-hour drive, but much easier to get to for me than Vegas. Yeah. So I remember I said something in our predictions episode last year about doing some sort of like East Coast show. I had said New York, I had said Connecticut, and I did say AC because I was thinking like if they're going to keep on with the casino vibe. So I was like, okay. Should I play the lottery? No, I'm kidding. But it's really exciting. It's not branded as the like Intimate Night with Kelly Clarkson, but that might be like, I'm wondering if it's like a branded thing with the Back Theater in Planet Hollywood. I have no idea. Or if it could be a brand new show. I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about that for a second, because the shows over the New Year's Eve weekend were obviously branded the Chemistry Intimate Evening with Kelly Clarkson Residency. The set list was very similar to that, but this is an entirely different coast. It's an entirely different casino property and a different casino company. So these are just being branded as Kelly Clarkson in concert. So we're thinking that this is probably going to be more of like what you would see Kelly create in a regular set list. Now,
I don't know about that.
Well, and that's where my point was going to be was that since it's on the East Coast, she might think, well, there's a lot of people out here that didn't get a chance to come and see my Vegas show. So maybe we just keep somewhat the similar Vegas set list, which, I mean, if you got that, would you be disappointed?
I mean, I would want a couple of switches, like, mm-hmm. you know, a different cover that we haven't gotten. Maybe rotating out one or two of the Chemistry songs. Say, I mean, I would not want a carbon copy of the New Year's Eve shows.
Yeah.
Not that we were there, but
right.
But I can't be picky. I'm just excited that she's going to be there. But I do hope it's not just a greatest hits show. I hope that there are some album tracks, maybe a cover or two, throwing in one or two of the classics. I love that format over the summer. So I would hope they kind of continue with that. And maybe they would have a tiny bit more time to rehearse. I don't know, because it's not around the holidays this time. I mean, it's around Mother's Day, which is not the most convenient for a lot of people, but it's not as busy as Christmas.
Yeah, so you would like something a little bit different than the Chemistry shows in Vegas, but also you don't want the 90-minute corporate show.
Correct.
Okay, I get that, and I agree with that totally. And, I mean, because there are a lot of people, I mean, a lot is a relative term because, you know, we're thinking of the people that we know that are all on the East Coast. There's a decent number of people who went from the East Coast who are big Kelly fans out to Vegas to see the shows. And then there's much larger group of people who did not. So I could understand why they might do something very close to the Vegas set list. Plus, it's something they already know. and they will have just a couple of months prior have just done a couple more shows doing that set list. But the reason why, and this is going to be the broader conversation of this particular segment of the show today, I think the reason why I hope it's different than the chemistry shows is for those people who have already seen the Vegas show and they want to see the Atlantic City show, they're paying significantly more to see the Atlantic City show than Vegas. And that's sort of where we have our one little bit of qualms with this whole show.
I want to preface with one thing. Artists typically are not responsible for making their ticket prices. I mean, the way that someone of Kelly's caliber is that the venue will offer her a guarantee. It's probably a very hefty guarantee in this case. Mm-hmm. And the venue has to make up that money. They have to like recoup that money by selling tickets and the concessions and probably taking a cut of the merch. That being said, the tickets for this these two shows are way too much money. If you go on the Hard Rock website, so like when I was there, when it got announced last Tuesday, I was like, all right, the range is between $149 and $349 plus fees. It's a lot, but I'm like, okay, fine. This is what we're working with. Fine. I will splurge. However, when you go on Ticketmaster, both pre-sale and now, that is not the price range. No. Some of the Ticketmaster does what's called dynamic pricing. So based on demand, they will make tickets more expensive or they'll lower them if they need to sell them. Clearly, this was a very high demand show. So there are platinum tickets that Ticketmaster has that don't even come with anything. They're just a way to mark up the price. There's no merch. There's no extra experience involved. But like I was looking at Front Row for one ticket on Wednesday. It was over $1,500 for one concert ticket with no bells and whistles with it.
You get to sit front row and that's it.
You just get to sit front row. And I'm like, that's deceiving because it was advertised as $350 plus fees. So like I already knew I was going to be spending way too much money on tickets, but not that much. Not like a literal rent payment or a mortgage payment for people. Yeah. And it's just really deceiving on for Ticketmaster and the venue. I may have gone off on them on Twitter.
just a little bit.
But rightfully so, because a lot of people can't afford even like the nosebleed seats. The last row is still $200. And like that's not affordable. The nosebleed seats are where people who don't necessarily have a lot of money, they want to spend the $50, $75 on the crappy seat and have a good time with their friends, not spend $200. That's a lot of money.
Even Kelly used to say that when she would go to shows, she would sit in the nosebleeds because those are the only tickets she could afford.
Exactly.
And now you have to be able to spend $250 to sit in the back row of the room.
And it looks like the venue has it's not different levels. So it's all kind of one level, maybe raised a tiny bit, but there's a lot of blind spots.
Yeah.
So if you're paying for side stage or the back, you're not necessarily going to be like above. You're not going to necessarily have the best view. So I just think it's a really, really scummy thing that Ticketmaster and Hard Rock are doing. And I really hope they get enough complaint that they end up lowering the prices. Because like I know earlier we were talking, you and I off air, about what currently the prices are. And you pulled up a seat. I don't know which row it was.
Yeah, I pulled up seats. This looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This is 8th row. $625 for a ticket, and that's before the Ticketmaster fees. 3 rows further to the front, $805.
Like, what?
Yeah, and then you've got, and these are the venue seats. I mean, yes, they're the official platinum or whatever they call them. These are the venue seats. And then you've got the resale market, which is a whole other episode in itself. $3,000 for two seats in the front row. $3,100.
That's criminal. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand. I mean, I do understand because they're all greedy, but it's just really upsetting. So needless to say, I have booked a hotel. I have not purchased one ticket. I will be in the building. I will be there, but I am like really holding off to see if like, you know, once the demand goes down a bit in a couple weeks or months, I'm hoping the prices go down a little bit because like there's no way. Like, I can't justify eighth row for $700. There is no way. There is no way I can justify that, especially because I'm not tall. So I will be seeing people's heads. And it's just, I want to preface, we are not crapping or poo-pooing on Kelly and her team. It is definitely like a venue Ticketmaster thing. And it's a whole further conversation of just like how the touring industry is now. Like, yes, I know record sales. They don't really make a ton of money there. They make their money with touring. I get it. But once you make the tickets so expensive, you're going to lose out on sales.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is that, you know, this isn't a beat the line or early entry kind of a venue. I mean, these are all seated areas. There are no GA areas.
I was thinking about this. We haven't had a legitimate like seated tour in a while. Like Vegas and Meaning of Life tour, there was seats, but there was also the general admission area, so you could stand. And there were like merch, packages, experiences, whatever that might be. Before that, we had like Miracle on Broadway in 2016, and we had the Piece by Piece tour in 2015. That was almost a decade ago. So we are rusty with purchasing seats for Kelly. A lot of us are. So it was kind of a rude awakening, being like, oh my God, this is how much it costs? Because like my Piece by Piece tickets weren't that much money, all things considered.
Yeah. And you know, you're going to have some people who will have to choose, because there's been nothing announced, at least as of the recording of this episode, there's been nothing announced officially that Kelly is coming back to Las Vegas in 2024. All signs point to that it's going to happen. And did we also predict that Vegas was happening again this year? I think we did make that official prediction. I mean, we're already doing well. At least you are with your predictions for the year. But, you know, some people didn't get a chance to go to Vegas last year, and they were thinking, okay, well, maybe if she plays next year. And then they see this Atlantic City show pop up, and they think, oh, my gosh, this is great. She's playing on this coast. Some people may have to actually choose between Vegas or Atlantic City.
That's probably me.
Yeah, because the tickets are just so expensive. Because some people are going to end up spending as much money to go to the Atlantic City show, especially if you want to bring a friend, as they would to fly all the way to Vegas and see the show there.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Also, like Atlantic City, like I love my state. I'm a proud Jersey girl. Atlantic City is not the greatest place.
Not a big tourist destination.
Yeah, I mean, the casinos are great. Don't get me wrong. Like, they're known for the casinos, but like the town itself has kind of declined over the years. So, yeah. I mean, if it's May, hopefully the weather will be nice and it will be a bit of a destination. But it's also like not like, oh my God, we're going to AC. It's like you're going to AC to gamble or go to like a nightclub or a bachelorette party or a concert or something. It's maybe a step up from Branson, right? You told me about Branson.
I don't know if Branson's got it going on like AC does, but
no, I mean, AC's fine. Like, don't get me wrong. Just like maybe don't walk outside by yourself at night. Just be careful.
Cool.
Yeah. Stay inside.
Or maybe take the 45-minute drive over to Philadelphia and explore there.
Philly's great. I love Philly. Anyway, we don't want to sound like we're just bitching about this whole thing. We're not, but it's just very frustrating that some people have to like really consider, you know, going to their backyard to see Kelly. Oh, should I go to that? Or like, can I literally pay my rent? Can I pay my bills this month?
Yeah.
And I'm just really hoping that like the word gets out somehow and they have some sort of compassion. I mean, I doubt it, but that the Ticketmaster and the venue have some sort of compassion where they're like, you know what? Maybe we'll lower it a little bit, make it a little bit more affordable, or at least make the prices what they advertise them as.
Yeah. And of course that doesn't really help the people who already ponied up and spent, you know, $500, $600 for a pair of tickets for the show. I feel for you if that does happen and you feel like you kind of got, you know, screwed over because you had to pay a lot. But at the same time, I mean, that's the gamble you make with dynamic pricing. And I think a lot of people understood that the Vegas shows were going to be a little spendy because it's Las Vegas. But, you know, this is the first set of shows outside of Vegas in a very long time. And so I think there's just a little bit of sticker shock. I mean, yes, it's also a casino town and I get that, but it's also Atlantic City.
Atlantic City.
You know, it, we shouldn't be paying Vegas prices, like double Vegas prices in Atlantic City.
Not at all.
So like I said before, you know, it's the dynamic pricing thing. It's not Kelly's fault. And Pam has said this too. You know, I think Hard Rock really just walked up to Kelly's people with a really big briefcase of money and said, have her please come and play our venue. And she couldn't say no. And now they got to make that money back somehow. You would like to think that they would just say, oh, these people are going to make our money back in the casino, because that's what a lot of Vegas places do. I mean, the Vegas tickets can be really cheap because they feel like they're going to make their money back in the casino. Now, does a Kelly Clarkson crowd go into the actual casino and gamble? Eh, maybe some do.
If you're like me and you win, you constantly are stuck with 35 cents.
But either way, you know, yes, we are very excited because there's new Kelly shows on the horizon. They are in a completely different place, a different coast. It's going to open it up to a whole new group of fans who hopefully will be able to access the show. And who knows what this means for future shows down the road. But it just kind of stinks that, once again, the big bad wolf of Ticketmaster and the big chain hotel Hard Rock decided that this was going to be cost prohibitive for a good amount of people, unfortunately. So that's our big gripe. We're not griping at Kelly. She's out there to make her money, and she's going to. And she's going to put on a great show.
You're probably going.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards yes, going. I'm kind of with you. I have not bought a ticket. I haven't booked any kind of rooms or anything. But, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, a little bit, if I could borrow from one of my Disney terminologies, a little bit of pixie dust gets dropped on me between now and May 10th and 11th. So we'll keep hoping for that.
And I will be there. I have absolutely no idea when I'm buying tickets, where I'm sitting, but I will be there because, damn it, I want to go. If you see us, please say hi.
Yes. And again, we don't know for 100% certain that we're both going to be there. But if we do, I don't know, and we don't know yet about any kind of a official capacity, Miss Into Podcast, anything. Because,
oh God, I didn't even think about that.
If this is what they're charging concert tickets for, there is no way in hell I'm looking to book a room or anything for like a live episode of the podcast. We might as well just go out on the beach or something and do it there and do it for free.
Ooh, that would be fun. It's like From Justin to Kelly. From Jeremy to Pam on the beach.
I'll see about renting some hovercrafts.
Yes. Start practicing your carry.
Pam will bring the whipped cream.
Oh, God. But start practicing your choreography.
So that's the Atlantic City shows.
We'll keep you posted if we see tickets go down in price. Fingers crossed, prayer circle.
We are so excited to welcome today a friend of the show, a friend of all fans, really, because he supersedes the fans both live and online as well. He is a percussionist for the Kelly Clarkson Band. He is Todd Collins. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, woo! Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
It's so nice to see you, you know, face-to-face, one-on-one, because normally we're used to seeing you as part of the ensemble of Kelly's band, and we've been excited to talk to you for some time, because one of the things that I love, not only just about Kelly herself, but the people that surround her, is that they are so accommodating and kind to fans, and we sort of have come to rely on you because you always help out fans, like right after a show, you're the one that posts out the set list of the show. And so many people get to, you know, have that little bit of feeling like they were there and they have a little bit more of a connection to a show. I guess the first thing that I have before we sort of get into the deep dive about who Todd really is, what is it like for you performing with Kelly and, you know, seeing the way that the fan base sort of reacts to everybody in the band?
Oh man, that's a really good question, Jeremy. It's hard to describe, first of all. Like the energy, first of all, before and during the show, the energy is just unbelievable. I've been around music. I've been in music professionally for over 30 years. And for me to not be able to describe it is, I mean, that's a thing for me. It's unlike any show I've ever been. The fan base is unlike any fan base I've ever been around. And I realized sometime in the residency, I realized that in the fans being so different or so unique, I shouldn't say different, unique. I realized that you guys, the fans, are the ones that pay my salary. So I have to be accommodating, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's so nice. Everybody's so engaging. Everybody's so hyped for the show. Everybody's so excited. So, you know, I feel somewhat indebted because I feel like you guys are my boss. Oh, you know what I'm saying? So like, I'm telling you, guys, I've been around this stuff for a long time.
It's an interesting perspective, but I appreciate the transparency. It's really refreshing. Because also a lot of artists, not you guys or Kelly, but a lot of them just don't give a crap about their fans, or they'll surface level, oh, thanks to the fans. But you guys are actually are interested and actually will have a conversation with fans, and that's refreshing.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is with social media being so connective, I'll have people reach out to me and say, hey, can I get a pair of sticks? Or, hey, can I get a pair of, or can I get a set list? Or I can, you know, whatever. And if it's doable, then I'm like, absolutely, no problem. Find me after the show and I got you, you know. I feel like that kind of stuff is the least I could do. Because some of these sticks are going to get thrown away anyway after a couple of shows. So yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. So I'm like, absolutely, So it's I feel humbled. It's very humbling because I'm just a guy behind the scenes. I love my job. I love what I do. I love staying behind the scenes. I love talking about other people and other things and not talking about myself because I have a certain insecurity with that. But other than that, I'm like, so I feel indebted and I feel humbled that people would be like, oh my gosh, let's talk, or let's say, stop by and say hi, or, you know, whatever. I got into that whole thing accidentally because if you guys remember at the residency outside of the Bach Theater is that bar situation that leads into the mall of Planet Hollywood. Well, me and Lester had a routine after rehearsals for the day of the show. We would go out that door and we would go down the mall and get something to eat, whether it's Chipotle or Chick-fil-A or something like that, just something quick. Well, people would start lining up and we'd just start talking. And it was super cool, super refreshing, and very, like I said, very humbling. Because people don't have to say, you're just a guy in the back that happens to, you know, pepper the songs with little ear candies. You know, it's not that big of a deal. But people are interested, and people were super kind and super, and everybody across the board. I've never had a situation where anybody was crass or any of that kind of thing. So it's been cool. It's very humbling for me.
Well, that's great to know because I mean, I think one of the reasons why we enjoy the band so much is because, like I kind of started to say before, you know, Kelly really surrounds herself with good people, and that resonates off of everybody that plays with her, both past and present. And so I think that, you know, one of the things that I actually loved about the Vegas residency was the accessibility to you guys, where not to where we could, you know, interrupt your day or anything, but it was cool for us to be walking that same mall or stopping in that bar and just being able to give you guys a high, have a great show. Like, you don't get that opportunity when someone's on, I mean, even when you guys are on tour, like, you don't get that opportunity. It kind of just, it brings everybody just a little bit closer together and makes it feel more like a connected experience. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there was a point where, you know, Jason sat down with us for a good hour in that bar right outside the doors. And we just sat there and, you know, talked, shot the breeze for, you know, an hour or so, just talked music, talked life, talked everything. And then he just went on his way and we went on our way. And then we acted like we didn't know each other when we got to the show. And it's like, oh yeah, there's that guy from the bar last night.
So
it's so cool.
That's the way it is. And I know you bring up Jason. I've known Jason since he was 19. And wow. Jason is, Jason is the guy that it's the filter down effect, because Jason's the boss. Jason's the guy. Obviously, Kelly's the boss, but Kelly really relies on Jason for all of the music stuff. So Jason kind of picks and chooses who he puts around him and that kind of thing. And it's the whole filter down effect, because Jason is the, you know, he's the leader. He's and the way he chooses personalities to work with and stuff is a testament to him. It's also a testament to Kelly, for having the wherewithal to say, okay, I'm going to put you in charge of this, Jason. I trust you with this. And Jason takes it seriously, man. I mean, he chooses, the people he works with are top notch in their field and top notch, even better humans, you know, truly, yeah. Truly.
And that's also to say, maybe we can get started here. So you've known Jason for a few years, you've known mm-hmm. Lester for a few years, and you've known Rick Robbins for a few years.
Yep.
Can you elaborate how that all came to be? Because I know you've been a musician since you were young. Like, you were mm-hmm. High school, college?
Okay, so my father was, back in the day, what they called a music director for church. What they call now is a music pastor or a worship pastor. That was his job. That was his profession. So I've been in music, both pop and Christian music, since 1989. I graduated college 89 and then moved to Nashville kind of accidentally. And that was the beginning of it. I've never used my degree or anything, but yeah, so I've been around music for my entire life. And because it's always been kind of ingrained in me because of my mom and my dad. But yeah, I moved to Nashville and just got connected with the right people and got involved with a group called DC Talk, which way back in the day.
Jason was part of.
Correct. Yep. Yes. Correct. He was in the band. I was in the band as well, but more so I was on the, I was behind the scenes. I was behind the scenes guy. I was making the records and that kind of stuff. So I was already in the business when Jason and Rhonda moved to Nashville. And so I've known them for as long as they've moved to Nashville, when they were 19 years old. Jason, the first record Jason ever played on was a record for me that I was making in the studio back in the day and so forth. So I know Jason that way through DC Talk and that organization. Rick, the same thing. Rick was with a group called Grits, and we used to, and so Grits was on the label that I used to own back in the day. And so I would produce some of their records, and me and Rick started working together and started producing records together. So I've known Rick since probably 96, 97. And then I don't know if you guys know, but Chris Michaelesi, do you guys know Chris Michaelesi? He's our front of house guy.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think I know.
I know the name. I don't know him personally, yeah. Obviously, but know the name.
Well, Chris was part of that crew too. He was with DC Talk way back in the day. So I've known Chris Michaelesi for almost 30 years as well. So all of those relationships are very historical. Lester, the same thing. He used to be in a Christian rock band as the drummer way back in the day that I knew, and kind of two to three degrees of separation. And, you know, so a lot of those relationships, and all of this is based on Jason, you know, having those historical relationships and just having the trust in those people to continue to work with them. You know, Jason's a loyal guy. He doesn't move on from relationships, or he doesn't, you know, the turnover in that band is not super high.
Right.
The drummer that he used to have, his name was Derek Wyatt.
Yep.
Do you guys remember Derek?
Mm-hmm.
Who's yep. passed away? He was the drummer for one of my groups on my label back in the day, a group called Out of Eden. So he comes from that whole camp as well. So there's it goes so far back, guys. You know, it's actually really cool.
I think we talked to Rick was in the fall, yeah. Pam, of last year. And I think that was the first time that I really realized that the roots of this band really do go deep, because we were just casually talking to Rick and he just threw your name out. And I thought, of course, of course, Todd is like weaved into this somewhere in the past, because and I know we sort of joked about this. I think it was with Jesse that it's Jesse and Jocko who really don't have the roots in Christian music. And pretty much everybody else does in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And so it should not surprise us at all that Chris is a part of that, and Lester. And, I mean, all of you guys just were bound to cross paths one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah. And oddly enough, I've worked with professionally, even way before American Idol and Kelly, worked with those guys professionally way back in the day. All of them.
Yeah.
And never thinking that, you know, 25, 30 years down the road that I would be in a band with them, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just bizarre. It's cool how whatever you think, whatever you believe, whatever you feel, how God works in ways like that. It's very providential to me, that kind of stuff, you know? And mentioning Jesse, even though we're not related, we think we
yes,
are.
Yes, I was like, I was just wondering, but I mean, Colin's a pretty common last name.
Well, we do. We joke to each other. She'll come up to me and say, hey, what's up, cuz? And I'll say, hey, what's up, cuz? You know. But her, I think.
It was her mom, I think.
Her mom or grandfather somehow was related to the upper management directorship of the of Word Records way back in the day when it was still in LA. So somehow, like, her family tree comes from some of that stuff, because I can't remember if it's her dad or her mom or her grandfather, somebody like that.
I feel like she told me, like, mom
side. That was somehow related. And so she knows people that I've known way back in the day and all that stuff. So it's all just kind of intermingled to some degree.
That's wild.
It's weird. Yeah.
So obviously, you know, you've been playing music for a really long time. Are you kind of a jack of all trades, or because we know you that you are currently doing percussion and such, mm-hmm. but you haven't always just done percussion, have you?
Well, I've always been from high school. Okay, so I've got kind of two personalities somewhat. I've got the church music kid personality. And then I grew up wanting to be an NBA star. And so in junior high and high school, I was the athlete. Well, those two worlds are very different. There's a whole different set of friends. I did music because Dad made me play music and sing music and stuff in church because I was good at it. And I did the sports thing because I loved it, right? So it's weird because in music, I guess what happened was it was just destined for me to kind of be in music, you know. Am I a jack of all trades? Probably. I think I am. I went into college, and like I said, I majored in music because it was easy for me. So I knew there was going to be an easy grade, I graduated and then accidentally moved to Nashville and got into music. And then I moved to Nashville to actually play drums and percussion. I got into percussion because I grew up in Florida, South Florida, and I got into all these Latin musics, especially Cuban music, traditional Cuban music. I loved it. And that kind of put me on the path of really being enamored with hand percussion and Afro and Latin percussion. So that's what I kind of studied in college. But once I got to Nashville, I moved there to work on that kind of stuff. And I did do, you know, played on records and so forth. But as DC Talk developed and then our label Goatee Records developed, I started becoming more of the producer, because I was kind of by default the guy that knew how to kind of put everything together. And so for close to 30 years, I produced records. And then, as you guys know, music changed in 2007, 2008, 2009. Retail kind of went away. Everything went digital. I was making great money back in the day. And then when it went to digital, things changed, the financial model changed. And my financial income changed from royalties and that kind of stuff. It went way down. So I started obviously getting older, started kind of aging out of being a producer. And I started thinking, I gotta kind of figure this out. I gotta figure out how I'm gonna kind of reinvent, so to speak. And so I just started basically delving back into the whole percussion scene of what I used to love anyway. And that's kind of how I went. So in the last probably 7 to 10 years has been really concentrated again more on this kind of stuff than the record making process. I did the record making process and loved it, but I did it for, you know, a lot of years. And now that I'm older, I'm like, getting away from the making record process has been cool because I don't have to be in charge. I don't have to deal with the artists all the time and the record labels all the time and stuff. So I can just concentrate on perfecting a craft, getting better day by day and so forth. So I've had a great time doing that because that's initially what I wanted to do as a kid anyway.
So I guess going back a little bit, so did you ever see like you ever doing like music business? Because do you ever think you're ever going to start a label?
No. Oh gosh, no. Pam, listen, I was a partner with two other guys in this label that Rick was on as an artist. And started it out as a production company.
Oh.
And it literally kind of took off. It kind of took off and we wanted to continue to stay a production company. We wanted to develop some artists and then kind of pawn them off to other labels. Well, what happened was we had this group called Out of Eden that we made a record and we tried to get it into other labels to pick up, to put out on the shelves. Nobody picked it up. So we were like, well, we got to do something with it. So we made some physical copies, put it on consignment in record stores, and it just kind of started taking off.
Wow.
And once it took off, then we had labels coming to us saying, hey, we want to distribute your records as a label. So we didn't know what we were doing. We were kind of having, it was kind of the spaghetti test. We would throw it up against the wall and whatever stuck, we kind of went with. And it was kind of trial by fire type stuff.
So you guys kind of worked as like a joint, both the production and label side for a while. So you were kind of doing both sides of it, the art and the business, I guess I'll say.
Uh-huh, yeah. And then with that came along, you know, the business side of learning all that stuff because
right.
we had to learn it by default, you know? So I've been in publishing and contract, you know, record contracts and production contracts and, you know, all that stuff. I probably know a little bit too much.
That's not something that you like, no one's born knowing like how like PROs work and how all that. No, like you have to actually somehow learn on the job.
Which is impressive that you even know what a PRO is.
That's awesome. Oh, thank you. Both of us have worked in music. Well, Jeremy still does. I don't anymore. I worked in management for a while, but I left. But thank you. I'm glad
You were smart. That's what you're saying. You were really smart. You're smarter than all of us.
I don't know about that. Offline. We will talk. we will talk.
Well, and by the way, we should also say, cause these three guys, you and the two other guys that you worked with, I mean, Joey, I mean, I don't know much about Joey, but I mean, Toby Mac, one of the biggest names in contemporary Christian music. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. We were all, we basically didn't know what we were doing. And we just, we wanted to make records that we enjoyed listening to because we didn't, even though I grew up as a Christian in music, I didn't grow up listening to Christian music, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
My dad was a jazz musician, played upright bass and horn. And so I grew up with a lot of old soul and funk and jazz records growing up. So I loved that stuff, that kind of music. So I didn't really grow up listening to Christian music, but then once we were in Christian music at that time, guys like me and Joey and Toby were listening to things like LL Cool J and Run DMC and Eric B and Rakim and, you know, all the old school hip hop stuff. So we wanted to make records that kind of felt like that and that we enjoyed listening to. And then it just kind of turned into So we didn't know how to make Christian records, is what I'm saying.
So,
and it right. just kind of turned into, it just kind of started taking off.
Okay. So I have to ask then, how did you get into the lane of nu metal? Cause I'm like, cause it seems like you've done a lot of different genres and I'm very impressed. So how does one, yeah. how does one pick which style they're going to go into?
You know what? Here's the thing. Toby told me a long time ago, we were working on his record called New Thing, which is back in 1990, 91-ish. And that was a time when I was kind of a new producer trying to, you know, hone my chops, so to speak, and so forth. And I was trying to lean him a little bit towards making a record that felt like a Run DMC record or something like that. Well, he was very in touch. He's always been very in touch with his audience. And I remember us getting into an argument one day, cause I would keep pushing, hey, we need to, let's make a Eric B and Rakim type record, or let's make it, it's gotta be more street. It's gotta be more hit. And it's gotta be, finally, he goes, TC, man, we can't do that. I'm like, why? We can do whatever we want. He goes, we've got to earn the right from the people that buy these records to be able to make what we want down the road.
Oh,
these people don't want that right now. So I've got to make a little bit of what I like and what we like, and we've got to also pepper it in with what they like, so we can kind of educate them to what we're going to be, so we can make exactly what we want to later on. And so that kind of, for me, that I always remembered that, and that always kind of played in the back of my mind, and we always kind of used that as kind of a mantra in making records with Goatee Records, with our label. And so we had obviously hip hop, we had a reggae group, we had rock, we had pop. Sonic Flood was a huge seller for us, mm-hmm. which Jason was in as an artist. He was in that band. So we just tried to, we had singer songwriter, we had all of them. Didn't mean that we were all huge fans of that, but we were all huge fans of getting the message out and selling records, you know? So that was kind of the mindset behind all that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about how you got to work. There's a couple of artists that both of us actually really enjoy. And one of them in particular, Pam would really love to hear Ms. Clarkson cover at some point. Talk to us about working with both Ben Folds and Stacey Orrico.
I am dying for Kelly to cover Stacey. I've been wanting that for years. And I'm like, I may have found my little way in through Todd.
Let me tell you something. Stacey is a ridiculous singer. Now,
so good.
I'll say this. Kelly is probably the best, one of the best singers. No, she is. I'll have to give her number one. She's a generational singer. We all know that. She's number one. But let me tell you something. People like Stacey is up there with one of the best singers I've ever worked with. I don't know if you guys know. Do you guys know? Oh, gosh, what's her name? I'll think of it in a second. Stacey was. Unbelievable. She could do anything. She could sing anything. She's a lot like Kelly in that. And I feel like she never got her just due.
No.
I think she was much bigger in Japan than she ever was here.
Really?
Yeah, she was a big star in Japan.
Wow.
And the only reason I know that is because I would get royalty statements, and they would be much bigger than they were here. But she was a legit star in Japan for a while. But she's not... from what I heard even recently, she's not doing much singing. I think she sings in church occasionally, but she loves what she does, whatever that is. And she's married and has kids and, you know, but let me tell you something. She was a freaking talent, man. She was a talent.
She somehow ends up on my Spotify Wrapped every year. I'm not kidding you. My like top songs or artists. I love Stuck. I love, there's gotta be more to like that. That album is, I think it's her, is it self-titled album?
Uh-huh.
And that's what you worked on, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, I'm geeking out a little bit.
And then I forget. You know what's funny, Pam, is I forgot about that. I forget about that kind of stuff.
I like texted Jeremy yesterday when I was doing my like little homework for this. I'm like, oh my God, I had to ask him about Stacy Orrico. I was very excited.
That's so funny. You know what's funny is I was laying in bed last night thinking, all right, I got to try to remember some of these old records that I did because they may come up. And those are two that I totally forgot about.
So then what did you do with Ben Folds?
I played percussion. Oddly enough, I played percussion on that one. I didn't produce that. I played drums and percussion on one of his, I want to say it's a solo record. You know, he was Ben Folds 5
yeah.
with the group.
Right.
Then he did some solo records. I think it was his first solo record. And I just played
the Rock in the Suburbs record.
I think so. I can't honestly, Jeremy, I don't remember I'd have to look that up. I'd have to look to see which one it was, but
yeah. I probably got the disc right here behind me somewhere in this library.
I was just going to say, that's impressive that you still have that.
Oh, I'm physical media till I die, man. I got more spilling out over here too. So
yeah. I so wish I had my CDs and LPs. I used to have a huge wall like this of nothing but LPs. I wish I still had it, but
yeah.
But yeah, I don't remember the name of the record or the songs that I played on. I honestly don't. That was back in, it had to be the 90s, the mid to late 90s.
Yep.
But yeah, he was great. I mean, he's a musical savant, that guy.
Yes, he is.
Unbelievable.
I have one other, so awesome. I have one other art, one other band I want to ask about, because I remember they were really big in probably around like 2005, 2006, Reliant K.
Love those. Matt Thiessen is one of my favorite people.
And I think I should have done my homework, but I don't remember. One of the members has like written or produced Kelly songs in the past. And I don't remember what it was, but I'm going to have to look this up. But I just cool that there's so much overlap.
It's probably Matt. Matt is, he's another ridiculously intelligent.
I'm looking this up.
Musical guy. But yeah, Matt Thiessen is another great one. I love those guys, the Reliant K guys. The thing I love most about those guys is they don't, and to this day, they still don't take themselves seriously. They're awesome.
Which is good.
Yeah, totally good. And I don't know if you guys know this, but Matt Thiessen and Reliant K have a connection with Katy Perry. Do you guys know that?
Matt and Katy dated.
She was Katie Hudson.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
And apparently the word is, and we don't know how true this is, but apparently the record I Kissed a Girl and Liked It or whatever, that kind of thing, that whole thing was on the heels of their relationship because it was tumultuous breakup and all that stuff, and a lot of that record had to do with that whole thing. So it was
okay.
And she was a Nashville girl too.
Okay, so this makes a lot of sense because Matt co-wrote a song with Katie that was supposed to be Katie's. And there was a demo that went around all on YouTube. And then they gave it to Kelly for her All I Ever Wanted album. It's called Long Shot, which the two of us adore. So.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
I didn't know that. Okay. Wow. You guys are making serious. You guys are connecting dots, man.
I feel like there's like that, like, there's that scene, there's like that meme from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where the guy is just pointing to all the different things. He's figuring it out.
Yes.
And that's us right now. We're solving clues.
It's all connected.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and the music industry is so much smaller than people realize. Like, there are so many different people that work with other people. I mean, you can do a 6 degrees of separation of just about any artist with just about anybody else. And especially if you get into the behind the scenes, you know, people that work with them and produce and write. I mean, it's going to be very easy to get there with just about anybody. So with that said, let's get up to the point where, you know, obviously you and Jason know each other by this point. When is it that you sort of come into Kelly's fold?
That's another good question. So, you guys will definitely remember this because you're historians. Kelly did, you know, Jason started producing stuff for Kelly, or has for, you know, almost the duration. He called me one day, and I want to say 16 or 17. She did the American Woman song for the
TV show. Yes,
the series on Paramount. me to do overdubs and play percussion on that song. And I'm, of course, I'm like, of course, yeah, send it over. I'll play it and do my thing and we'll be done with it. And so what happened was they did it. It was cool. It turned out great. And obviously she sounded phenomenal on it and so forth. Well, the CMT Awards, they wanted her to do that song because that show was coming out,
right,
and they wanted her to perform that song. Well, Jason, months after the song came out, I guess, he calls me and he said, hey, you remember that song, right? I'm like, yeah, of course. I need you to play it live. Have you heard all the crap that's on that track? Like, there was like, I sent him like 12 tracks of stuff.
Oh my God.
I said, I'm not going to be able to play all that stuff at the same time. Cause there's tons of overdubs. And he goes, well, just pick stuff. And then whatever you don't play, we'll just have in the track. So that was kind of the beginning of, and I want to say that was 2017, maybe. You guys would probably know better than I.
Well,
I'm losing my mind, but
I only know this because I looked it up last night. Otherwise I wouldn't have known. It was 2018, but you were very close.
Hey, okay.
And it was in Nashville, so that was a nice commute for you.
Yeah. Correct. Oh, yeah. I just had to go down the street. So we performed it. And I guess you'd have to ask Jason this. I guess he just liked the aesthetic on stage and he liked how it sounded and all that stuff. And he just started calling me for other stuff to do live, including stuff on, as you guys would know, again, during the pandemic when everything was remote. And so I would I played, I think, a couple of episodes on
Did
that.
Did you really?
With some stuff. Yeah. One of them that comes to mind was the Kokomo. Way down in Kokomo.
I love the Beach Boys. I saw the Beach Boys without Brian Wilson, obviously, but I saw them a few months ago. One of the best shows ever.
Gosh, I freaking love the Beach Boys. Now that's one of the records I grew up with, Pet Sounds and all that stuff. Phenomenal record. So I mean that's legendary. Those guys are legendary. So when he called me to do that, I just set up stuff in here and had to record it and send it in and all that stuff. So that was kind of the, in long form, Jeremy, that was kind of the how I got involved in the live aspect. I've always been involved. Jason's always been involved with me to some degree on the recording side and vice versa. But that's kind of how I got involved in the live side. And he knew that I've always been a percussionist / drummer. I've always loved all that stuff. And like I said, I played on the road with DC Talk for years, you know, so he knew it was there. So that's kind of how I got that start with Kelly, so to speak.
That it just blows my mind. Cause first of all, we have big appreciation for the American Woman cover. And it's just funny. And this will make sense to you. Cause I'm still going to call you an athlete. You're never not an athlete if you were ever an athlete in your life.
Thank you.
It's funny to think that like American Woman is like the Todd Collins rookie card of, you know, his relationship with Kelly Clarkson. Cause you would never think, cause it was a one-off song, you know, it was just meant to be a theme song.
It's not
song
even on,
for a TV
it's not
show.
Even on streaming. It's nowhere to be found.
Yeah. 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 It's a hard find but it's a little gem that's out there. And maybe, you know, when she has like a greatest hits volume 2, that'll pop up on there because I'm a big Lenny Kravitz fan. So love that they stayed true to sort of the Lenny Kravitz version of that cover.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of appreciation for that song. So I love that that's sort of your origin for playing with Kelly.
Well, I tell you what, before you go on, I tell you what, if you guys ever need a copy of that song,
you know, get one. Thank you. Noted.
That, you know what, and we'll wink back to you, Top. It's hilarious that you think that we don't already. All right, so tell us about the when the you know Jason sort of gives you the call and says, I think I want to have you come out on the road with us.
Okay, so that was I had done a couple of little one, like I said, like little one off live things and that kind of stuff. When they were setting up the residency, which was, they started talking about that, I want to say a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago. It was, I'll never forget, he texted me. I was sitting on the couch. And to be really honest with you guys, I was like, man, I don't know. I haven't set up my year. I was actually kind of kind of in a somewhat of a down state. I was like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do this year. You know, now granted, I've kind of gotten to the age where I'm kind of thinking retirement, even though I don't want to retire and all that stuff. But you know, the career trajectory is doing more of this than it is on the upside. So I was, you know, sitting around one day, I was like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do because I don't have my year planned out. And I promise. And so I don't mean to over spiritualize things here, but you know, I was kind of in a meditative prayer state and I was thinking, you know, all right, God, what do you have planned for me on this one? You know, I'm going to try to take my hands off the wheel, have faith and let you take the, you know, let you drive this thing. And so, this is a God's honest truth. Not a week later, it was days later, I start getting these texts from Jason, because Jason's like me. He doesn't like talking on the phone. So we do everything through text. And so Jason was texting me. He said, hey, would you be willing to do this? We have this idea. We're thinking about doing a Vegas residency for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. And he said, and he started laying out the dates and, you know, rehearsal times and all this stuff. And just like that, my year filled up. And I literally, guys, and like you said earlier, Jeremy, I like to think of myself as a professional athlete that happens to make money at music, even though I'm not. That's my mentality, right? So at that time, I literally got emotional and started to weep because I felt like that was a providential message to me. And so that was kind of the impetus behind me becoming more a regular part of the band. Because here's the thing, honestly, I mean, let's just go ahead and acknowledge the elephant in the room. Percussion is not necessary. It's not necessarily live. It's not necessary on records. I look at percussion as icing on the cake. You know, it's sometimes it makes the, it normally makes the cake look better. A lot of times it makes the cake taste better, you know. That's kind of what percussion is, but it's not necessary. And if something goes that has to go, percussion stuff is the first. So I was really emotionally taken by that, for him to want to think of me enough to call me and say, hey, I want you to be more of a permanent part of this thing, and here's what we're going to do. And so that's the way it's been for, you know, for, I guess, going on 2 years now. So,
wow.
Even though I've been in that camp for a while,
right?
I haven't been, you know, in that camp as a staple, but now it's way more of that. You know, I think I look at myself kind of like Aben.
Yeah.
Kind of on a similar, he's not in the show band, but every time they play live, me and Aben are usually there.
Yeah.
You know,
which I love. It's like, it's a nice little like, oh, there they are. And, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I know like Aben sometimes once in a blue moon will like fill in on the talk show. I didn't know that you played on the talk show. That's very cool. Uh-huh. So it's,
yeah,
it is like, it's a big extended family.
Oh, it's totally. And I'm very, very leery of using that term family.
I mean, I got you.
I'm more the guy that thinks of things, okay, we're more of a team, but this group that I've been a part of for the last, well, since 2017 is more of a family oriented, because I mean, it feels like they're my brothers and sisters, but you know what I'm saying? Like Lester is my brother. Jason is my brother. You know, those guys are, I feel close to those guys. Those guys are good friends. You know, and they feel like family, you know, so that's a testament to Kelly and a testament to Jason, you know, that's leadership is what that is.
Yeah. It's chosen family.
In my mind, I picture you guys, I mean, I want this to be true. Do you guys ever just sit around and just talk music? I mean, I understand that it's your job and I would, you know, every once in a while, if somebody said, oh, you know, do you want to talk radio? I'd be like, oh, you know, I talk about radio all day. Like, do I need to talk about it more? But I mean, because in my mind, I want to be a fly on a wall listening to you and Lester and Jason and, you know, even Aben and Jocko just sitting around talking about music. I mean, does that happen ever?
Oh, all the time. It happens all the time, Jeremy. I think it's because we all are just music fans and we all just love music. And so it doesn't feel like it's work. And my job with Kelly doesn't feel like work. I mean, I feel like I'm so fortunate and so blessed to be able to do this kind of stuff and to be able to sit around in the dressing room and just shoot the breeze about music. And so I've been turned on to more new music from those guys in the last 3 to 4 years than I probably have been turned on to new music in the last 10.
Wow.
You know, and it's because of just sitting around talking music. And those guys are a wealth of knowledge. And Joe, you know, the new guy, mm-hmm. Joe Ayoub, unbelievable wealth of knowledge and extremely talented. And he comes from a world to some degree that I've been enamored with because he used to play with Shakira. So right. All that Latin influence is what he's been a part of. So, you know, I love talking to him and picking his brain about certain things and stuff. And we'll trade texts back and forth of links to records and, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah. So to answer your question, Jeremy, we do sit around and your fantasy is fulfilled. We sit around and talk music for sure.
Oh, I love that. I love to be a fly on a wall and just and listen because I personally, I have many different genres that I'm into. I don't just, you know, hang out in kind of one. So I've sort of always been like in that musicologist kind of a mindset. I'm just a sponge for knowledge. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, I've got this one area that I'm hyper fixated on with this podcast and with Kelly and everybody. But, you know, I love all different styles and kinds of music. I'm a concert nerd. So I love just knowing that even though it's your job, even though it's your every day, there's still much more to discuss amongst all of you guys as a band and as you says, as a family.
I'm telling you, music is, I know this is so cliche to say, but music is truly the universal language.
Yeah.
It really is. And the older I get, the more I realize it, the more it blows me away, you know, because it's a never ending learning process, whether you're playing, whether you're talking about it, whether you're learning about new things or whatever, it's a never ending. Cause you can never learn enough music. You can never figure it all out.
Right.
You know? And that's the thing that I think is so cool. So yeah, we sit around and we, like I said, I've gotten more new music from those guys lately than I have in a long time, you know?
That's awesome. So this is like a little, I'm going to like pivot a bit because I have no idea how to pivot here. So you've also done a lot of like charity work and nonprofit work. I was reading up. Can you elaborate on that? Because
yeah,
it was music related, it seems.
And here's the thing. I always tell people, and I've been asked to panels and that kind of stuff, whether it's workshop music workshops or whatever, the one thing that I've always ended up telling people since we talked about earlier, since the shift, the retail music shift has changed from physical product to digital product and so forth, that changed a lot of things financially. And so my mindset has always been, since that change, you have to learn to change with it, right? So I've always learned that, or I've always thought since then, that relationships are now the new currency.
Yeah.
You know, obviously with music, currency was the currency. You know, you either bought, you had something to hold, you bought it, and you would get a royalty statement and so forth. Now, if you don't have good relationships, you're not gonna get paid. You're not gonna be able to support yourself, you know, whether it's music or whatever. So I always say that the new currency is relationships. Well, having said that, I have, in all of the years in music, I've got tons of relationships, and I just got into that field through relationships, through music relationships. And so, so I've been working with charities like Child Fund, World Vision, Children International, Compassion, you know, all those charities. And basically what I will do is I will connect people to a child sponsorship. It's not adoption. It's just sponsoring a child in, say, a third world country that's very poverty stricken. And it's unbelievable how little money it takes for somebody like us, an American, to help support not only a child, but a child's family, to just the bare, for the bare essentials. And so, so I've been involved in that for probably the last 7 years.
That's great.
So, and it's all through music, you know, it's all been through music, and it's super satisfying. It's more of a heart thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's more of a, it's very, like I said, it's very satisfying that I can do something and be a part of something that's bigger than me.
Yeah.
That I have nothing to do with, really. I don't really feel like I'm doing anything, to be honest. I'm just kind of a connector.
I feel like, so I work at a nonprofit now, and we help people with addiction. And
yeah,
I feel like everything you're saying right now, being like, I don't think I'm doing anything, but like from like a high level, like we are, you and I are helping, yeah, even though we're only like, yeah, a small little puzzle piece, but yeah, it's cool when you kind of take a step back. You're like, oh yeah, I actually, mm-hmm, am. If I help one person out, yeah, this year, then like,
it's worth it. Yeah, absolutely. It's worth it. I look at it as I'm out of the hands and feet, you know, I'm the boots on the ground to help somebody hopefully better themselves.
Yeah.
From a bad situation, you know, in this situation, it would be severe poverty, you know, that we don't see in our country a lot of, you know. So it's something I've been doing for, like I said, the past 6-7 years, and I kind of got into it accidentally.
Love that.
And it's just been super fulfilling, you know.
Well, look, I mean, no shock here that once again Kelly has surrounded herself with people who are not only incredibly talented musicians who really, really know their craft, but at the end of the day are just damn good humans, honestly.
Listen, thank you for saying that. I don't look at myself as a damn good human, I'll take that. You know, I've got a lot of work to do. Trust me.
We all do.
My wife would tell you that too.
We are all a work in progress. That's what I like to go by.
That is a fact.
That's right.
That's a fact.
Another pivot. Cause again, we're just going to pivot. Do you have any fun memories, what fun memories, fun stories that you can share with us from your time that you've been with the Kelly Crew? Like anything that's happened backstage or anything?
That you're able to divulge.
Not to put you on the spot, but I'm putting you on the spot.
That's a great question. And that's what makes you guys as good as you are, what you do. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Let me see. You know what, the one thing that really comes to mind is there's not necessarily any tea or any of that kind of stuff that I could tell, like backstage stuff, because we're actually all kind of boring, to be honest with you. We love each other. We love hanging out with each other. We talk and shoot the breeze all the time, but there's no like real crazy
That's
stuff.
Good. That's good.
The thing that comes to mind, honestly, are the stories like going to Chick-fil-A and stopping for an hour and talking to, you know, people that are in the line that are waiting to, you know, it still boggles my mind. It still baffles me. And I know this is going to sound really stupid or idiotic or moronic or whatever you want to call it. It boggles my mind that people will actually spend a lot of really hard earned money and stand in line for hours to come see somebody sing to them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy.
It is.
So to me, you know, bebop down the freaking mall in Planet Hollywood to go get a Chick-fil-A sandwich and come back to go upstairs and go backstage, stop and talk to people for an hour is nothing. You know,
oh,
I mean,
God.
we've got 2.5-3 hours between the ending of rehearsals and the beginning of the show. Anyway, that's the kind of stuff. Whenever you ask that question, that's the kind of stuff that comes to mind. Is that's the most memorable stuff, you know, for me anyway. Some of the most memorable,
which
stuff,
is great, because, you know, like, there's so many people that would be in your kind of shoes. I don't want to, just in general, that would maybe be like, "Hi, nice to meet you. Oh, can I get a photo? Sure." And then be like, "Sorry, gotta go," and yeah, don't. And I think that really speaks to all of you guys about how just you guys enjoy people. You enjoy the fans. Mm-hmm. You want to connect with people no matter who they are. And I really admire that, because someone in your position, easily can just write that off and be like, sorry, I'm going on stage in 2 hours, you know.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people do. And
there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Not to say that that's wrong. A lot of people do. But it's just, like I said earlier, I look at it as the fans are partially my boss.
Yeah.
Number one. And everybody has a story, you know. And to be honest with you, I like talking about other people. I like talking about other people's, because let's face it, if you're in a conversation, everybody likes talking about themselves, right? I like talking about other people and I like hearing their stories, you know? And so, because everybody has a story. So to me, that's memorable, you know?
And I think one of the things that I love, I'm sorry to interrupt. One of the things I do love about everyone in that camp is that everyone has a commodity to share and to give out, and for you guys, first and foremost, it's your talent. You guys share your talent commodity with all of us, but I also appreciate that so many of you share the commodity of time with fans, because like Pam was saying, you know, we don't always see that with every sort of band and artist. And I mean, you can even grow that to a larger entertainers kind mm-hmm. of thing where you can't always get their time. They're already providing you with, you know, everything they've got performance wise. They're going to try to keep something for themselves. And a lot of times it's their time. So the fact that, you know, we can say that either we personally or people that we know has been able to share and spend some of your time just outside of the Vegas shows speaks a lot for the kindness that you guys all have in you. And that it's something that, you know, some of these fans will, and for me even, will never forget. Mm-hmm. You know, I will never forget that Lester took 2 minutes, not even 2 minutes of his time, for me to shower him with praise and snap a quick photo after a show. I appreciate that Jason sat with us and just talked with us on a human level mm-hmm. for, you know, for however long that he did. That is something that I will never forget and that I am forever indebted to, because there are so many different places that you can spend your time mm-hmm. that to spend even just a little bit with fans is, it speaks volumes and it means the world to each individual fan. More so, I think, than you guys even might realize.
Well, as I'm talking to you guys, I've realized that this is not something that has come up with us amongst band members. It's just kind of who we are. A lot of us just love people. And I kind of look at it personally as somewhat of an ambassador. Now, the reason why I say that is because in a lot of ways, I'm a big dude. I'm 6'4". And a lot of times people say that I've got this resting bitch face, you know, when I'm walking around by myself and I look intimidating. I don't think I do. But and so the last thing I want is for somebody, I'm conscious that I don't want to look like I'm unapproachable. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so yeah. I want people to be able to be comfortable enough to, if they have a question or, you know, now sometimes it may get out of hand, but for the most part, it hasn't. You know, especially during the residency stuff, all of the fans that I've ever come in contact with have all been nothing less than unbelievable. And so I just don't, you know, I kind of look at it as being somewhat of an ambassador. I'm one of the luckiest guys I know. I mean, I get to play arguably one of the top five entertainers on the planet currently. Mm-hmm. How many people get to say that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I get to, you know, she's literally a huge star.
Which we forget sometimes, not going to lie.
I mean, name five stars bigger than her right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
It's a tall task.
She's yeah. in so many industries right now.
Yeah. So, for me to be in a position to be, you know, kind of holier than thou, so to speak. I want to soak as much of this stuff in as possible because it's not going to be forever.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a great way to
look
at it.
So I want to take it all in as much as possible. And like I said, I look at it as the fans to some degree pay my salary. So, you know, I want to do as much as I can.
I love it.
He's Todd Collins. He is a percussionist. He's a producer. And we forgot to mention Grammy Award winner. Let's not erase that from your resume. It's on there. Grammy and Dove Award winner. And it has been so fun to spend a little bit of your time with you today. We certainly do appreciate it. And I will just say, as sort of a parting word for you, if I may be so bold as to steal an album title from Salt-N-Pepa, percussionists are very necessary. All right. And don't ever forget that.
Well, guys, let me tell you something. It has absolutely been an honor. I listen as much as I can. I've listened to y'all's show.
You guys do a
phenomenal job. You guys do a phenomenal job. I love how you guys don't take yourself seriously. I love that. And you guys are very professional, but at the same time, you come across as being very humble, and it's refreshing. And it's entertaining. So it's a lot of fun. And I'm thankful you guys even thought of me to come on the show. So it's been cool.
We did not pay Todd to say that. I promise you. Todd,
we're going to talk.
Todd, thank you so much.
Todd, thank you so much.
I got to tell you, Pam, I don't know if I am ever going to be not shocked at how kind and nice all of the people around Kelly Clarkson really are. And once again, Todd Collins, proving to us that she just has a bunch of nice people who work really hard, who are insanely talented, and have a long history of music experience and a breadth of music knowledge. I will never get tired to talking to all of the people around her. And Todd is another new favorite.
I know. It's like that like meme that's like pretends to be shocked that everyone's actually really cool and really nice and really talented. No, he was an absolute blast to talk to. And because I had only ever like communicated with him via like Instagram or Twitter.
Sure.
Like in Vegas, we saw him physically on the stage, but we never got to meet him or chat with him. So I'm so happy we finally got this moment too. What a nice guy.
Yeah. And I got to say, man, he could be a guy that I could sit there and just talk music to for hours and hours.
Yes.
Again, just like anybody else in the band. And so we really appreciate Todd taking some time and hanging out with us. And now I really want to go back and re-listen to American Woman again.
Me too. Also, if anyone in my band y'all is listening, please cover Stacey Ulrico. Okay. That's my little PSA for this episode. Okay. So as always, you can find us on all the socials, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Miss Into Podcast. If you listen on the Spotify app, please consider leaving us a rating there. You can also comment on this episode and individual episodes as well. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please consider leaving us a rating and review. And we'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And until then, hope you guys have an awesome rest of your day. Bye.
Take care, guys. See ya.
Thanks for listening to Miss Into Podcast. Miss Into Podcast was written and produced by Jeremy and Pam. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you'll be the first to know when a new podcast is posted. Find us and continue the conversation at Miss Into Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Find more at missintopodcast.com.